Coming up on this week's Naked Property Investor.
Every single landlord should seriously consider renting legal protection insurance, because on the flip side of this, if you haven't got the insurance, you're looking at 6 to 9 months with no income in rent, 6 to 9 months of additional mortgages to pay if you do have a mortgage, and then legal fees to pay on top of that. But most importantly, it's all the stress and energy and effort consumed in that whole process.
From the Property Investor Studios, welcome to the Naked Property Investor with your host, Kizzy Nkwacha.
Kizzy is the publisher of the Property Investor magazine, Money and Finance, and Business Game Changer. Kizzy is also the editor of the successful Property Investment book series and the founder of the Property Wall of Fame. Every week, Kizzy and his guests provide you with the vital tools you need to take your property business to the next level. Now, meet your host, your mentor, and the godfather of all things property, Kizzy Nkwacha.
Hello and welcome to the Naked Property Investor. The great political economist David Ricardo once said that the interest of the landlord is always opposed to the interest of every other class in the community. Now, one man who takes exception to Ricardo's position is my next guest, Sim Sekon, MD of Legal for Landlords. Sim has a strong views around protecting landlords' interests and the dilution of landlords' rights. We'll be talking to Sim in just a few minutes. And don't forget, if you enjoy this naked interview, take a minute to share a comment, because sharing is caring. See you in a few.
Hi there, my name's Kavitha from Alora. My company is based in Melbourne in Australia. So I wanted to offer a couple of pieces of advice on a person who wants to become a property investor, a successful property investor. So I started my journey off by initially trying to, in terms of my career, earn as much as I can so that I could basically put some money aside to buy property as young as I could and also to be able to service it. So I started my journey as a engineer, project manager, and I bought my first property at age 19. And from there, what I did was I did a renovation a couple of years later, and I uplifted the value and got some good rent because I furnished the apartment as well and I rented it out. And from there, I then bought a development site. So from that development site, I then could build some townhouses and sell them. And so what I did was, in a nutshell, is I started basically very small, as low a price point as I could, and then I refinanced and I also tried to earn as much as I could and get a property where I could uplift the price very quickly versus waiting for the market to grow. And that has been how I've been able to grow my own property portfolio a bit faster than maybe just sitting on capital, just purely capital growth. So basically buy something that you can do something to, whether that's a renovation or a development. And then once you do that strategy, refinance and do it again. And you can gradually grow the extent of your project as long as you're comfortable with it and you're making, you're taking on mortgages you're comfortable with. And also alongside doing that, I would recommend ensuring that you're trying to earn as much income as you can. So I wouldn't ever do this on your own, like without a job, because it's just going to make the whole thing a lot more, it'll just stress it out a lot more for you because you're relying on rental income as your only source of income. So that's my advice and how I got to become a successful property investor.
I'm Andrew Ward, I'm the founder of Solomon New Homes, and you're listening to The Naked Property Investor.
Hello and welcome to another Bare All episode of The Naked Property Investor. I'm in the studio talking to Sim Sekon, MD of Legal for Landlords, a business that supports thousands of landlords and letting agents throughout the UK by providing tenant referencing, insurance and legal services. Sim, it's fantastic to have you join me.
Yeah, likewise, Kizzy. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sim, tell us a bit more about Legal for Landlords. I know I gave a brief overview of the company, but tell me, what do you do and why does it matter?
Yeah, so the number one objective is to protect landlords' best interests, period. And that's exactly what we try and do. So we were born from legal services in terms of debt recovery, rent recovery and tenant evictions. And that's the advice that we give because solicitors are really busy out there doing multiple types of law and legislation. And timelines and costs can be different. So we put something really simple together about the entire process and the fee structure and made it really clear. And the business grew from there, really, from 2009 onwards. So then our landlords and agent clients started to talk to us about, you know, you're protecting all these landlords when it gets to the situation of worst case scenario, evictions or debt or rent recovery. How about doing something to prevent that and, you know, and help with that situation at the beginning? And then we went down the tenant referencing route, and then that naturally developed into the insurances route on protection. So it's full circle, really. We're all about prevent. You know, they talk about prevention's better than cure. We are in that unique situation where we can help the landlord let an agent on all stages of the journey where they're in it. They're in a bad situation, they're in a good situation, or they want that added protection. Now, obviously, with everything that's going on in the world at the moment, everybody is talking and thinking about protection because everybody needs protection from the unknown. So as you can imagine, that is really big for now. So landlords, letting agents are really key. And then we've started to really help tenants as well from in terms of protection for tenants. So that's a different angle. But in essence, it is all about protecting the needs of the private rented sector and ultimately landlords, agents, and obviously tenants come into that.
When we talk about vulnerable groups that require protection, you wouldn't naturally think that landlords and letting agents would fall into that criteria.
Yeah, they're really high on the list. So as you can imagine, the average agent in the UK manages 250 properties, for example, and the majority of landlords in the UK, 90% plus, have one to two properties. So these guys are amateur landlords or accidental landlords or inherited properties in order to become landlords, but don't really know what they're doing. And there's so much legislation, so much tax law, so much stress that can be involved in the whole process. Agents do a fantastic job to cover all that for such a small fee on behalf of those landlords, because ultimately property investment is a business and it is a long-term strategy. Gone are the days of quick buy schemes to flip the properties and make a huge profit, unless you're cash rich and it's a different type of investment strategy. But landlords and agents play such an important part in the whole economy and the whole private rented sector, but they are so vulnerable when it comes to any type of economic change or legislation. They're obviously we're used as a political football, the whole industry is.
I said in my intro that you do have strong views around protecting landlords' interests and the dilution of landlords' rights. And I think you've underlined that and explained that really, really well. But I guess the abolition of the Housing Act 1988, Section 21 notice flies in the face of everything you stand for. Now, for listeners who aren't familiar with Section 21, these notices are regularly used when a tenant defaulted on their rent or breached another condition of their tenancy agreement, and they're usually called no-fault evictions. But Sim, why are you so opposed to the abolition of Section 21?
It's been used in different contexts. So the main reasons that we see Section 21's being utilised is if, for example, the landlord's rented that property out, moved to a different part of the UK or a different part of the country, the different part of the world, and they want to move back into that property. The only way of doing that is potentially via Section 21. If they want to do serious repairs or renovations to the property and they need the tenant out, it's a Section 21. If for any change of the circumstances to that property owner, they need to use a Section 21. If the landlord has no rights to that Section 21, then it's obviously going to cause huge issues. On the flip side of it, you've got a Section 8 with multiple grounds that obviously changes all the time. Now, some of those grounds are discretionary, some of those grounds are mandatory, and it all depends on judges' discretion when it comes to that situation or legal defence, legal aid. So landlords need a lot of protection for various scenarios and situations. They need the law on their side, but Section 21 will put a lot of question marks in place for that. Now, based on the recent situations with COVID-19, as of the 25th, which was yesterday in the evening, an updated version of the Section 8 and Section 21 came out now, whereby they are extended to both be 3-month notices. So, which is huge, and best practice that kicks in from the 27th of March. So there's lots of changes, and without that Section 21 now, it'd be really difficult to help landlords and protect landlords from that situation. And then there's the question of long-term tenancies, periodic and fixed-term tenancies. There's lots of questions that will throw in that into the mix as well. Now, we know there's going to be a new Section 8. We know there's going to be multiple grounds updated, and they will protect landlords, but we'll just have to wait and see for those updates to come in to see what the impacts are going
to
be.
It's interesting that you referenced to Section 8 as well, because I know that one of the problems with Section 8 is that it can take a hell of a long time. It's time consuming. I read somewhere that it takes about 22 weeks from claiming to get in a vacant possession under Section 8. Is that true?
Yeah, so yeah, 6 to 7 months, I'd say, is probably the average worst case scenario. Yeah, that's if you go through the notices, court proceedings, and then potential bailiffs as well.
The government's gone on record to say that its intention in scrapping Section 21 is so that it can focus on improving the court system to ensure landlords get a faster repossession of properties through, you know, for legitimate cases. Isn't that a good idea?
Yeah, you'd think so, but we need all the infrastructure in place to do that and the systems. It's very, very methodical in terms of this whole process, and it needs a technological solution to streamline absolutely everything from processing paperwork to submitting files to having secure links. The proof needs to be there in order to see this. Now, when the government announced the universal credit system years ago, it cost absolute hundreds of millions, and you know we're still in this situation now in 2020. Where's the confidence in the government to update all the court systems and those systems and processes to make it as slick? Because it's easier said than done, basically, and I think we're years away from that scenario, because the county courts have all merged together. They've consolidated over the last few years, so there's less county courts. There's only so many judges available to do these work, to do the works as well. So advocates across the UK are really busy with lots of different types of law. So online hearings, virtual hearings, automated processing of paperwork, secure links. Imagine a court system where it was paperless. So there's lots of these great ideas knocking about, but the reality of they could take years to come in. And obviously the Housing Act needs to be updated as well, because the UK Housing Act hasn't been updated for a long time. And we've seen Scotland do theirs recently. So it's only a matter of time before that changes. But there's a lot of moving parts to this, and it's not as easy as a few politicians putting out some words.
I was going to say, it sounds like what you're saying is that the government's got its policies upside down then, that really what they should be focusing on is improving the court system, make sure that this court system beds in and grounds to repossess properties are properly improved before making changes to Section 21.
It's a bit of both, Kizzy. So Section 21, we know it's going soon, and with Section 8, it's going to be enhanced and improved with those clauses and those main reasons that I said that landlords would typically use a Section 21 for. They will be put into a Section 8, those grounds there, and we've seen those grounds, so we just need to see them come into fruition now and get into practice to see if that Section 8 pretty much stands up for that reason. Now, the whole stigma behind a Section 21 was retaliatory evictions. The example was given that I read a while back was, you know, the tenant keeps on contacting the landlord because they don't know how to change the light bulbs. So landlords got fed up a tenant and said, right, you're getting served a Section 21, even though they're a good tenant and they pay on time, which is just not the case for the strong majority of landlords across the UK.
Okay, look, we're going to move on, and because I know this Section 21 issue and debate it takes a lot of thinking about, and it's going to go on for quite a while. And a lot of the discussion, unfortunately, sheds more heat than light. So we're going to have to just move on a little bit. But just before I go, I know that the abolition of Section 21 is going to have a huge impact on landlords, and it will happen. How can they prepare for it?
Yeah, no, it's a good question. You've got to have everything lined up at the beginning. So it's what we always say is there's that much demand for rental property in the UK. You need to put all those efforts into getting the absolute best tenant possible based on the information you've got before you go into that property to avoid you for any situation or scenario. So it's so important to make sure you're compliant, make sure your legislation's all ticked off, make sure you do work with a quality agent, preferably an Arla Property Mark one as well, or one that you trust, that are trusted. If you can visit them, do so. If you speak to an agent online, visit the website, speak to the quality of your staff. People buy off people nowadays, but you need to make sure that agent's fully competent, the CMP, they're following all the right legislation. The tenant reference checks are thorough and in depth. You've done everything you can to mitigate all types of risk by working with an agent and doing all those checks yourselves as well. Getting that property in place, getting the right insurances that you need in terms of rent protection, legal protection insurances, having that all set up at the beginning, getting it all right first time, you will mitigate all those risks and potential needs of Section 8 and 21 without getting the crystal ball out.
I like the idea of mitigating risks. I'm wondering whether some sort of rental guarantee insurance would fall into that category.
Yeah, I'd say it's absolute essential. So, you know, the average policy can cost you anything from £10 to £15 a month, for example, and it can cover rents up to 2.5K. So obviously that we've put a pause on them at the moment with obviously the COVID clause. So there's a lot of debate with regards to those types of insurances at this moment in time, but they will be released again in the future. However, every single landlord should seriously consider rent and legal protection insurance, because on the flip side of this, if you haven't got the insurance, you're looking at 6 to 9 months with no income in rent, 6 to 9 months of additional mortgages to pay if you do have a mortgage, and then legal fees to pay on top of that. But most importantly, it's all the stress and energy and effort consumed in that whole process. So our legal advice line, in terms of our legal advisors, it is a form of counselling. 90% of the conversations are counselling for clients to help them through the process, regardless of what we sell, how we do it, the advice we give. It is just being a helping hand. And that is the most important thing with the situation. If you had rent and legal protection insurance, then that would change things massively. And for such a small fee, I think it should be mandatory. And not just because you could sell more insurances, it's far from that. It's because for the sake of a few hundred pounds to protect your biggest asset in your investment, it's an absolute no-brainer.
Absolute no-brainer. Very, very wise words. Let's move on from Section 21 and the complications and challenges and opportunities that it presents. Let's talk about the general landscape. Sim, how do you see the general landscape for property investors, bearing in mind everything that's going on around us at the moment?
Again, I've been thinking about this a lot lately. I think when we see all markets crash in terms of the stock market and what's happened, and obviously what happened in 2009, you look back and you think, right, what did the property market do then? Obviously, prices are reflected within certain crashes, as you can imagine. Now, prices haven't been the best the last 12 months anyway in terms of investment and stocks and shares and interest rates. But then we had the Boris bounce that everybody was talking about early this year. Market activity, market sentiment increased. Now this has happened now with the whole coronavirus outbreak. I do see a potential buyer's market happening, being available in the next 6 to 9 months. So for those that are cash rich or asset rich and they've got the liquidity and able to purchase properties and invest in properties, there could be some really good deals up for grabs. And obviously with the interest rates now being, 0.1%, we haven't seen a lot of mortgage products come to the market yet on really attractive rates, but it's a matter of weeks before we try and push that stimulus back into it. So I see private landlords as being key to helping out in the next 6 to 9, 12, 18 months. In terms of buyers moving properties and selling houses and buying houses, I see those prices as well reducing. Again, I can see price reductions of between 5 and 10%. And that's just reading several forecasts from several big, large and corporate agencies in the last couple of days as well. So everybody thinks it's a great time to buy in a recession. And the last several recessions have proved that to be right. So there's lots of other issues, obviously, to being a private landlord or what have happened in the last couple of years. But every investment needs to be weighed up in terms of the pros and cons. And all I can say for investors, it's focus on the yield value and focus on the long-term strategy of being a landlord.
With regards to these price reductions that you're predicting or expecting of 5 to 10%, is this across the board, or are there certain regions of the UK that you think are going to be more resilient than others?
Yeah, when we talk about the UK and we look at stats and figures, we always look at the UK as two. So you've got inside London, which is practically within the M25, and then you've got the outside the M25 for the rest of the UK. I see London will be the central and prime London, and within the M25 will be hit the hardest with this. We've already increased stamp duty. We've already increased international buyers tax as well. So I do see those high value properties being hit the hardest in terms of rental. But then again, 35% of rental properties are within the M25, are within London for the UK. So I see the rest of the UK. I see deals to be had everywhere, really, in the northwest, in the northeast, in the Midlands, even the southwest of England as well. So we are seeing a lot of inquiries come up now. So talking slightly differently, when we do have a lot of legal issues for landlords that have one or two properties and they've gone through that stress and hardship, they do want to sell the properties, and some people do want to exit the market totally. So we provide those landlords that help and that support in those situations. But property has to be seen as a long-term investment. It's no longer a 2-3-5 year investment. It has to be seen as a 10-year investment. And I'd like to think most landlords that are investing do look beyond 10 years plus with regards to property investment.
The UK has historically always experienced a housing shortage. We have far fewer houses than the demand would normally dictate. And you think with all the uncertainty at the moment with regards to investing in bricks and mortar, this is a great time to be a landlord, isn't it? Because more people are going to look to rent rather than purchasing a property straight away.
Yeah, so again, in over the last 10 years, I think what the stats push into now, so more than one in five, just over one in five properties in the UK are rented now, based on obviously all the latest stats and information. And I think it's predicted by 2025 that one in four properties will be rented. So the whole culture, the mindset, the ethos of that, you know, I'm a millennial, but I think, you know, the Gen Zs, the Gen Ys, that culture set and the mindset there is totally shifted from the opposite of, from, you know, from what my parents would say would be to, you know, you get a good job, you earn money, you save, you get your own property, you get on the property ladder and take it from there. I think the flip side of that now is you rent, and that's the mindset, because those deposits are such a big commitment, and the average first-time buyer age is through the roof. The average renting person's age is 37, 38. So it's a lot higher than what everyone would think it'd be. So that's why the government are trying to put all these controls in place and all the legislation changes, all the tax changes, because they know as well, 10, 20, 30 years' time, we're looking at one in three, a minimum of one in four onwards for property to rental ownership. So if you look in typical streets now, people can look around and say, you know, one in four, one in three of my street is rented.
I don't think that's going to change anytime soon, because property prices aren't going to fall. The deposits, as you said, are phenomenal. And it's not uncommon to find professionals in their 30s all sharing accommodation and thinking that that's perfectly normal.
Yeah, exactly that. So, you know, I take my estate, for example, and the majority of my estate's all retired apart from one house. It's a 5-bedroom house, and they've got 5 rooms rented to professionals all within their 30s. And coincidentally, they all work in the NHS.
Wow, amazing. I've just been given a note saying that we've got just about enough time to go to the section of the show called the 30-second masterclass. Is that time already? Blimey, we really have run out of time. Sim, 30-second masterclass. What this means is that you'll have 30 seconds to sum up the most important lessons our listeners should take away from this conversation. Are you game?
I'm game.
Okay, right. Don't sound so nervous. You're going to be great, honestly. Sim, 30-second masterclass. The clock starts now.
Okay, so if you're a landlord investing now, if you're a professional, if you're semi-professional, or you're an accidental or amateur landlord, the rules and best practice I can give to you is work with a professional letting agent. Work with one that's going to really work on your portfolio to maximize the yield on your portfolio or your current portfolio and help you with investment tactics across your particular area. Most landlords only buy within a certain miles of their area as well. So work with professionals, get as much advice as possible. Do your due diligence as well and take some tips from what I've mentioned in this podcast.
Fantastic. Summed up like a true pro. I've got thousands of questions I've still got to ask you, but I know we've run out of time. I'm just wondering, let's try and touch base again in a couple of months, Sim, and maybe do a part two to our conversation.
Yeah, no problem, Kizzy. Appreciate it. And thanks for inviting me on.
It's been fantastic having you. Thank you so much for sharing your knowledge, your experience, and your wisdom on the Naked Property Investor.